Battlefields Reminiscences, Braille 4. This is James Hill continuing.
Now the second day I call a typical day of considerable activity all around the divisional front. And at first light that morning, a heavy concentration came down on this area here, and a determined attack was put in across here and up the road here. The 2-inch and the 3-inch mortars, such as they had, they cut out all rules and regulations and just dropped them as near their own chaps as they could. The attack was broken up and the enemy made their way into the wood there. Now, the 2nd Jeep had arrived. They had the extra machine guns. And there was a Sergeant McGeever mounted one of the machine guns on the Jeep, and it used to come out of one of these places here, get up behind the hedge, and shoot up the opposition, and it was very successful. Morale was high, and the slit trenches were deep. During that attack, they captured a captain, and they were rather pleased with this, because in his pocket he had a letter to his wife, saying how they'd driven the British parachute troops back across the River Orne. And that was a bit unfortunate. Now, 11 o'clock that morning, quite a busy morning before then, the CO got word that a strong detachment of the enemy were going through that wood there, aiming, he thought, for brigade headquarters, and having promotion in mind, he thought that he would deal with this situation personally. So he took out 30 chaps, split them up into two, went into the wood. The brigade intelligence officer went up to the brigade defense platoon, and as you saw, you heard of that splendid ambush written up by the field ambulance chaps. Very successful. 4 o'clock that afternoon, the Germans repeated the same thing. The listening post reported Germans entering the wood. And this time, the CO decided to send out Major Charleston, the reserve company commander, splendid chap, together with a Lieutenant Parfitt and a team of chaps. And they went out into the wood, and this time the Germans ambushed them, caught them, killed Major Charleston, killed Parfitt, and wounded a number of chaps. This was a very severe setback with the sort of numbers we had. But that's the way war goes. That evening, Major Dyer, with a considerable number of chaps, 30 to 40, turned up, and by this time, with stragglers coming in, the battalion strength was round about 200. He patrolled out to the chateau that evening, and it was empty. But the maddening thing was, we didn't think we had the strength to go and sit there. Now, that's 2 days, gentlemen. It's going quite well. I think what I picture I just want to paint here, that it wasn't like it is today. This was full of dead animals, cows and everything else. Nothing stinks more than that does. Unfortunately, the chateau had been, the stables brewed up, and really, if we'd known now, we'd have done everything we could do to let the horses out. They were all dead, smelling. There were lots of Germans here, dead, and really it was the most unappetizing place. And living in these woods with the flooded Dive, everybody was being eaten by mosquitoes. And I think that's just a point to remember. Now, the third day was exciting. That was the day that the Germans broke through the Breville Gap. And they came down and attacked the divisional positions in Romville. So they came through Breville, they passed through at 10:30, and we didn't know, really, that they were passing through in large numbers. Then at 11:30, a glorious thing happens, which it happens once or twice in the lifetime of a battalion commander. 50 Germans came down through this wood and lined out in the road. And these chaps were very good at holding their fire, so they didn't automatically poop off. The CO told them to hold their fire. They took off their packs and equipment, lined themselves out, did this, and started to dig in the side of our ditch down the road. this was particularly good, and I ought to have mentioned the day before that CO dug in a machine gun here and another one on the other side of this road, covering the road. He brought up some Brens, and then at the appropriate moment opened up with everything you had, and there were these poor chaps digging comfortable little holes for themselves, and there was a good slaughter, I'm afraid. Right. Now, at 12, the other thing the CO had done with his 200 chaps, the numbers increasing, he'd put those two machine guns there, and he'd put a platoon out where that cow is. And there's a ditch there, and they improved the ditch and dug themselves in. And at 12 o'clock, a fighting patrol, and a proper one this time, came across here, walked right on top of their platoon. There were about 18 to 20 of them, and I think I'm right in saying that the records say that only six of them escaped. At 2 o'clock that afternoon, the fun really started here, and a company attack supported by two SP guns came straight down, or straight in this direction, down the line of the drive. The mortar ammunition was running very short, and the CO had got his peats together. He was a resourceful chap under these sort of conditions, and they simply lobbed the peats straight into the air, and they were a considerable disadvantage to the enemy. Sergeant McGeever with his jeep came out and, to everybody's delight, with his machine gun, brewed up the SP in the corner of that field there. So that by that time this attack had dwindled, and then the battalion, who was trying to winkle out the 9th Battalion, switched and came up this field here. This was an extremely determined attack, and during the 5 days it was the only time that the 9th Battalion position was penetrated. They got into the wood, and there was a certain amount of hand-to-hand fighting to winkle them out again. One of the things you'll remember, a nice little episode, Lieutenant now Lord Greenaway stood on that bank in full view of everybody, and shouted back to the CO's wireless set in the wood with instructions to the Arethusa. The RSM of the Canadian Battalion then got on his metal, and the bricks started coming down at Breville and in this area here. And again, these big shells, gorgeous orange flame, black smoke, very frightening, and eventually that particular attack was beaten off. They captured the commanding officer of the battalion during the attack, and he told them that his battalion, which was the 2nd Battalion of 857 Regiment, had been completely decimated in these two attacks here. Now, it was very interesting. When I was up here that evening, the reaction of these chaps were that they'd been here all their lives. And this is one of the things that happens when you're in a really flat-out, tiring battle, day in, day out. You live in eternity. And I felt so sorry for them, because I knew just what they were feeling. They just felt they'd been here as long as they can remember. And that happens when you get dead tired and have to carry on. That evening, our divisional commander didn't like being attacked in Ronville. And he's decided that this place must be liquidated. So I was sent for, and he said that to do the task, that I would be given the 5th Battalion of the Black Watch. A very distinguished and highly trained lot of chaps. I had a talk to their commanding officer, Colonel Otway, and the CO said that he would like to have a company in the chateau, and he'd like to put his attack in from the southern end of the 9th Battalion up across here onto Breville. At the end of everything those chaps had been through, the last thing I really wanted to do was to tell the CO of the 9th that he must now do an attack and clear the chateau and get the Germans out. They were whacked and so on, but anyhow, they certainly did it, and they went in there, and of course, when they got there, there were no Germans. So they were able to get into the chateau. The Germans had withdrawn, and they held it, and up came the Black Watch, a company in here, a two-company attack going in from the south, and the forming up areas in the back. Well, the next day, gentlemen, is the fourth day of this story. By now, the chaps are pretty tired. They haven't had much respite. They're patrolling at night. And so dawn came. The attack was supported by the divisional artillery of the 51st Highland Division and the mortars, such as they were of the 9th, and, of course, the mortars of the Black Watch. And all the necessary fire and everything came down, and these chaps set out across here. They had a very difficult task. There's a very difficult ditch, but you don't know how difficult it is until you look at it in your bus, by the bus down in the bottom. And they got over that, and it was the old question, the last 50 open yards to a strongly held position. And unfortunately, when they got up there, they were very badly shot up, and the attack failed, and they withdrew. It was very sad. They were a gallant lot of chaps. They lost a lot of people, and what was so important was it didn't come off. So there was nothing for it then but to get down to it and get the two COs to coordinate their defense. And the positions they took up was the Black Watch in the stable and the chateau area here, and in this wood here, and the 9th Battalion there. The Black Watch gave to the 9th Battalion two anti-tank guns, which they manned. One was in this corner, and another was somewhere back here. I can't quite recollect where. During the whole of that night, we heard a lot of activity going on. And during the night, again, after a fairly heavy day, the 9th Battalion sent out a patrol and actually cratered in quite a big way the road leading into Breville at the back. Now, during that evening, I was given three troops of Sherman's. And we were delighted about this because we were very keen on tanks and we like tanks in wooded country. And one troop I gave to the Black Watch. And the commanding officer said that he would like that troop up with his chaps in the chateau area there. And I remember that evening talking to the young fellow commanding the troop, and a splendid young chap went back to my brigade headquarters, and half an hour later I heard the whole lot had been brewed up. And this was terrible. Three good crews gone. It was awful. And these wretched tanks sat right on our doorstep. What had happened was the first one charged up here, got to the end of the road where he turns right or left and was brewed up, and I suppose instead of going up one at a time, the next chap was following and was brewed up in the middle, and the other wretched tank was brewed up here. So here you had the picture of these three tanks, German SP there, and our three of our own Shermans, which was terrible. We felt very bad about it, and I'm afraid there it was. Now, gentlemen, the last day of my story, 4 days of fairly tough fighting, no rest, and the last day was really the key one. And this is the day when I say the big attack came in on the chateau here and the Bois du Mont, this little wood here. And it started at 12 o'clock, and not only here, the way down the brigade front. The Canadians had it just as hard as these people here. Started at 12 o'clock, and the preparation fire and things finished about 3 in the afternoon. The 9th Battalion sat here, and I always remember, for some extraordinary reason, they'd sit well dug in their trenches, and they always used to sing Six Old Maids in a Lavatory. It wasn't a very enterprising story, but it seemed to keep them going and their heads down. Now, at 1500 hours, the main attack started, and we reckon it was supported by 6 tanks together with SPs. And it was a battalion attack, and it came across here, in this direction, not this side of the road then. And gradually, the Black Watch were pressed back, and they came back into this wood here. There was one very gallant platoon, about which I'll tell you, the Black Watch, hanging out in the corner where this set of rails meets that one. And there it was. It wasn't going very well. And early in the afternoon, I suppose about 4 o'clock, after the Germans had got in this wood, they switched the attack across to this side. During this attack here, they were supported by 2 tanks. And they got right up close, and one wretched tank literally looked over the hedge where that little tiny telegraph pole is on the left, and he shot up and killed the crews of both these machine gun posts here. He was hit twice by Pietz, but the thing bounced off. One or two rather nice little things which go to win wars took place here. The first one was that this battalion was very short of ammunition, and in the field there was a Black Watch carrier with nobody there, so the RSM charged out across the field with a company sergeant major. They got in the carrier, drove it here, saw either one of the tanks or the SPs there, stopped off, manned this empty anti-tank gun here, fired at the opposition. I'd like to say they hit it, but they didn't, but it was a bloody good gesture, and they got the ammunition back into here. The other thing that wins battles was a young subaltern here by the name of Slade. And he was watching.
That was Brigadier James Hill describing part of 9 Power Battalion's battle at Chateau Saint-Com. We'll now hear from Sergeant Doug Woodcroft, who was a platoon sergeant in A Company 9 Para, also who took part in that battle, but saw it from rather a lower level.
Heard today a lot of stories of success. My first was a failure. In 1944, I was a platoon sergeant, number 7 platoon, A Company, 9th Parachute Battalion. My company commander at that time was Lieutenant Colonel Parry. On D-Day, you heard A Company was depleted by taking 3 glider loads away from it, leaving about 2 plane loads left. I was a stick commander on one of those planes. We took off, crossed the French coast, red light went on, we started running in. I always jumped from aft for some reason, and the 19 went out all right. This time I didn't. I'd forgotten, I'd never jumped before with an entrenching tool strapped to my leg. The handle of the tool went through the strops. I went arse overhead. I laid in the doorway, and that was it. It took the combined efforts of a navigator and a dispatcher to get me on my feet and disentangled. We asked the pilot to go in again, but he'd had enough. He's on his way back to England. We landed okay, and about 2 hours later, back in the transit camp, I was joined by the glider party that had failed to make the objective and had landed in England. We were later briefed that afternoon, and this time we had to land and make our way to the Laminal Crossroads, the Brickworks Chimney, was our objective. And believe it or not, they put me on a glider. I was dead scared, I was sick as a pig, and I felt very naked without a parachute. But we landed safely, ran across the LZ, and by nightfall were firmly established on the crossroads at Laminal. We stayed there for approximately 3 days, engaged in the fighting in that area. Our numbers increased daily as the stragglers came in from every battalion in the regiment, in the division. After 3 days, we were pulled out, and by a circuitous route, we came up a track by the side of that wood about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, had made contact with the right flank of our battalion, which was A Company. We reported in and was told to rejoin my platoon, which I found about 15 strong. My platoon commander was already dead. He'd been killed on D-Day. We dug in by the side of that barn over there. I got nicely down about 4 feet, hastened on my way by several accurate mortar bursts, and got nice and comfortable, and they said, get out, take your platoon, move in the ditch. So we moved in the ditch, and our position then was from that white post on the corner to the tree here. We spent a fairly quiet night, and next morning a Sergeant Frith and myself, a great personal friend of mine, he was killed on the 19th of August, his body is buried in Ranville Cemetery. We had to report to battalion headquarters. Running through the woods over there, the battalion headquarters were in a house situated in those trees. Running through the woods of the item of interest, I began to realise just how short of men and material we were, because in the hedgerow, driven at the hedgerow, was a jeep at that angle, and mounted on the bonnet of the jeep was a piet. There were some house bricks by the side, and they'd been placed under the bipod to either raise or lower the trajectory of this weapon. And it was being used as a mortar firing in the direction of the chateau. We were briefed for the patrol by a company sergeant major Beckwith, who the day before had been in the chateau, and he was, as probably as you've already heard, he'd hit the jackpot. He'd found the regimental pay and had come out several thousand francs better off. Our objective on this patrol was to search the outbuildings, the chateau itself, take along a signaller, and report back every 15 minutes on the position up there. We came back to the ditch, detailed 6 volunteers in the old army fashion, you, you, and you, 5 riflemen and a Bren gunner, collected a signaller, got as far as the entrance to the drive. We stopped, we decided we would split the patrol into 2 parties of 3, and we tossed who would get the chateau. I won the chateau, and off we went. We went up the drive. There were many more trees at that time, quite large ones, so we had a bit more cover. We moved up there in bounds of about 50 yards, leapfrogging each other, until finally we made the dash for the chateau door. Opened the door, walked in, and there's a first indication that the Germans had been caught by surprise. The hall, the big room at the bottom, was being used as a dining room. Down through the middle, there were about 6 tables placed end to end. The tables were laid, and it's obvious the evening meal had been in progress. Each place setting had a half-eaten plate of rhubarb and custard. And evidently somebody had rushed in and said, they're here. They dropped everything. The chairs were overturned. Glasses were smashed as they ran to get into their battle order. A further search of the bottom of the chateau revealed nothing of importance, and we started up the staircase. There's a large staircase that goes up with a left-hand turn. Going round very cautiously, I was suddenly confronted by a very scruffy individual, green paint still on his face, unshaven, pointing a Sten gun at me. When my helmet settled, I realised I was gazing into a full-length mirror. When my backside returned to normal, we proceeded on to the first room. This happened to be the officers' dormitory. All the beds were still made up. They hadn't been slept in. Each place, personal effects stood around. Cameras, there were some lovely Leicas in there. Books, some had evidently served in Italy. They are phrase books. There were photographs. I picked up a photograph and kept for some time, a picture of a very pretty girl from Caen. The address was on the back. I never got to Caen. I often wondered what reception we'd receive. The next room I've always been intrigued with, opened the door, and there was immediately a strong smell of perfume. There were curtains drawn. I went across, drew the curtains, and there were 2 beds in there which had women underclothing on, dresses, etc. I don't know what class they came under, comforts for the troops or something similar to that, perhaps. The next 2 rooms, QM stores, clothing, rations. And the final room, there was a large roll-top desk, maps on the wall. Evidently someone of importance was there. I picked up a poker from the fireplace. The roll-top desk was locked. Inserted the poker, as if as a signal, there's a burst of automatic fire immediately under the window. We dropped everything, flew down the stairs to be greeted by Sergeant Frith dashing in through the door, closely followed by Lance Corporal Watkins, who shouted, "Jock's had it." With that moment, Jock went by the door at a fair rate of knots and disappeared down this drive. Now, what had happened, and Lance Corporal Watkins tells a beautiful tale, Jock Patterson, searching the outbuildings, had struck the wine cellar. Being a good soldier, and deciding the water we were drinking was bloody awful, he'd armed himself with as many bottles as he could carry, walked out of the doorway, slap bang into this patrol, couldn't see where he was going, and started advancing onto them. Whether they thought this was a mean trick for the British or not, some weapon new to them, they opened fire on him, hit him in the leg. We shot Lance Corporal Watkins straight across to join the others and ask him to return fire because we got to get our signaller out. He had the large set on his back and he was rather handicapped. We got him right across the far side of the room. We yelled to Sergeant Watkins, "When we shout go, watch out." We shouted go, and by the time the signaller got to the door, he was really travelling. He went out of the door and he also disappeared down the drive. We now tried to get out the doorway ourselves. This was in a fair state. The door was rapidly disappearing under the fire. Pieces were coming off the walls. So again we shouted to Corporal Watkins, "Withdraw down the track. We will try and get out through the French windows in the front." We tried and these were locked. The only way out then was by brute force, and we both ran at them as hard as we could and came out in a load of glass and broken window frames. We ran, and you can't see it now, that... with the rails round wasn't there at that time, but this wood is more or less L-shaped. So running out through the French windows, we ran into the nearest part of the wood and immediately got entangled with some horse-drawn carts. They were water carts, ammunition limbers, which were parked in there under cover. The Germans evidently thought we were going to run straight down through this orchard. But instead, as they came across the front of us, we both gave them a magazine of Sten for the inconvenience they caused us. And we then ran back through the wood here, shouting as we did, "Ollie, Ollie," which was A Company's rallying call. This was evidently based on some call by the Covent Garden porters. As a patrol goes, I suppose it wasn't all that successful. We'd had one man wounded, we'd lost our wine, we'd lost our loot, but we had found out at least that the Germans were now back in the vicinity of the chateau. We now moved back into the ditch, and as you see, we didn't have a great field of vision. This side, we were fairly safe. There was a platoon dug in from A Company along the hedgerow here, so this side, we were fairly secure. That was our main concern. As you see, visibility was very poor. The ditch now is more overgrown than it was then. You could see the man, or perhaps two men, on either side of you, and that was all. In view of that fact, we decided this would have to be a section battle, and every section would have to look after itself. Another thing we decided, the section on the top, up by the post fence there, would be very much out on a limb, and very lonely, and we would try whenever to rotate every 24 hours. We didn't know how long we were going to be there. Another thing, we decided we would fight in pairs. 2 hours on, 2 hours off, whenever possible. For some reason, the Germans never came at us at any strength. They were always probing. You could hear them in that wood, crashing about in there. Sometimes you get a section, sometimes the odd men. Two fell on top, almost on top of a section in the ditch and were shot. They laid up there for the rest of the time we were there. The other occasion was in this very corner here. I was down the bottom here. About midday, had a brew going, crouched in the bottom of the trench, when I suddenly realised that my companion was staring rather fixedly over my shoulder. I looked at him, went to speak, and he motioned me to silence and pointed. And I turned, and as I looked, the bushes parted, and the head and shoulders of a German soldier appeared. In his hand, he was carrying a stick grenade. He was after the Vickers, which was dug in the corner of the bank there, firing down the road. All his attention was on that Vickers, and as he raised his arm, my companion shot him, and as he fell, his helmet came off and struck me on the shoulder and rolled in the ditch. He was a very brave man. He was all alone. There was no one else with him. Night times in there were the worst. We stood to at dusk, and after an hour stood down. The password had been sent up. Flanagan, answer Alan. Fish, answer Chips. Things like that. Got hungry, I tell you. Then all movement ceased. If anything moved outside of this ditch, we shot at it.